I love her. I love her very much. I've never had a feeling like
shut
this.
Shut up.
And speaking of love, weren't you and I going to talk about that today?
Yes, we were.
But, well, couldn't you manage to arrange your time so you could have a little fun, too?
Welcome to BombCom, the podcast about the romantic comedies that you love to hate.
And hate to love. I'm Kat.
And I'm Molly.
We'd like to acknowledge that the recording of this podcast takes place both in the region of Peel, which is part of the Treaty Lands and the territory of the Mississaugas of the Credit.
And Ottawa, which was built on unceded Anishinaabe Algonquin Nation territory.
What were you going to say before about you went to a Christmas bar?
I went to a Christmas bar last night. So there are a bunch of like Toronto pop-up Christmas bars. The first one that we went to that we had reservations for, we showed up and we were like, we saw the sign for the Christmas bar, but the door looked dark and no one was going upstairs. And my friend who I was with was like, yeah, we have reservations for upstairs. And the waiter was like, no. And we were like, huh? And he goes, that's only a Thursday to Saturday. And we were like, okay. So then we just sat in the regular restaurant and, like, ordered food. And it was a nice restaurant. It was great. But it just wasn't what we came there for. And we went all the way up to, like, Davisville. So it's not, so far. But it's just, like, you have to get on the other train and
no,
go north.
It's far enough.
Far enough, yeah. Right? So.
Yeah.
So we did that. And then we were trying to think of other Christmas bars to go to. And then we were like, okay, like, let's go to Miracle on Bloor Street. That's a pop-up Christmas bar. We'll go there. Show up. There's a line, obviously. And the first time we were in line, they said a 45-minute wait. And we were like, okay, let's maybe think about it. And then we had to go pee. We went to the Tim Hortons to pee. And then we were like, should we go
to... As one does.
Yeah. It was like 8 o'clock, and we were like, should we go to Comedy Bar, watch a comedy show? But then the comedy show started at 9. And we were like, not that it's like so far away, but then, you know, it's just extending our night, and we all mostly had work the next day. So then we go back to Miracle and we put our name on the list, and it was like an hour wait. We're like, okay, let's go to a different, they directed us to a different bar. He kept sending people to this one bar down the street, and it was a really cool bar. I actually want to take you guys the next time you're here.
What's it called?
It's called Paradise Grapevine, I believe. Really cool, really like trendy, just like wine, beer, sparkling, all that kind of stuff.
I can usually guess the vibe of a bar or restaurant based off the name, but I cannot imagine what Paradise Grapevine.
What are you thinking of when you hear that?
Okay, based on the name, I think it looks like your Italian aunt's kitchen in the 90s. But based on the fact that you said that it's trendy, makes me think it's like minimalist with like white marble countertops and maybe some gold accents.
Okay. It's like somehow both of the things that you said, because it's like minimalist, but it's got like old wooden furniture, like rickety ass chairs to sit in.
What, like pews?
No,
like in a church?
No, like wooden chairs to sit in that were just like not metal chairs, or like chairs that I could tell are from IKEA, you know?
Oh, okay. I like that. That's like my house.
Yeah. And then tables were all wooden. They sold, like, the menu was just a written on chalkboard. You had to go up to the bar to order. Very minimal light in there, except for the alcohol, which was like in like a red or pink light, and then the wall of wine and cider and whatever else they sold was also kind of in like a neon pink light. It's very cool. I took photos. We gotta go. They also had merch, and I was like, I would love to go. Anyways, if anyone's in Toronto and is listening, go to Paradise Grapevine. Yeah. You don't have to tell them I sent you.
You're a slut for merch.
I am a slut for merch. I literally kept staring at it. They had tote bags and sweaters, and you know that's what I like.
Uh-oh. Those are the two worst ones. Those are the two things that you love the most.
Yeah.
Literally anywhere we would go, you would be like, they've got t-shirts. and like crew neck sweaters. No, the tote bag and the crew neck sweater are probably your biggest weaknesses,
yeah.
I'd say.
Yeah.
Kryptonite.
So then we had some drinks, and then we got a plate of olives and a plate of chips that were ham, Spanish ham flavored. Hamel.
Okay, hold on.
Yeah. They were very delicious chips. And then we just like snarfed up the olives.
I'm torn.
Why?
Ham flavored chips, huh?
They're very good.
I believe you in my heart. Mm. I would try it.
Yeah.
Try any chip once.
Yeah, exactly. You always say that. Mm-hmm. You're never not saying
it. I do. ABC, always be chipping.
And then we finally got the text that we were allowed to go to Miracle Bar. And this place is
blessed. It's a Christmas miracle.
Yeah. Head to taint, decked out in Christmas stuff. Balls hanging from the ceiling. The waiters and waitresses wearing goofy ass Christmas things.
Stop, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. I love commitment to the bit.
Yeah. Christmas wrapping paper or like wallpaper all over the walls. Several photo opportunities everywhere.
Oh my god.
Expensive Christmas ass drinks with wild names. Mm. The one,
what'd you get?
I got Santa's Little Helper, which was a gin.
Is there some kind of cream-based liqueur? Oh, gin. No. Okay. Oh, because they used to call gin Mother's Little Helper.
Oh.
So it was gin.
It was gin. That's really all I remember. I can't remember.
It was just gin.
I think there was seltzer in it. And then there was eucalyptus something. I can't remember much. But there was like things like, I think grandma got run over by a T-Rex or something.
Girl.
That was served in a T-Rex mug.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah. You had to call
a
it
T-Rex
that.
With a Look, little Santa hat.
If you are some kind of proprietor of a pop-up shop, and it is themed, and it's Christmas themed, and you find mugs or some kind of glassware that looks like a T-Rex with a Santa Claus hat, you are kind of bound to make a drink that is themed.
Exactly.
To that effect.
Exactly.
There's not really another option. No, so exactly. I get it.
You have no choice. And then when we were on our way up, the security lady was like, on the way out, we will be checking your coats and bags because, and they're like, no offense, but we will be because the cups are really cute and people have been stealing them. So, and apparently like the people I was with yesterday, they had gone to this Christmas pop-up last year and they weren't selling the cups then, but this year they're selling them. So she was saying she got a hot chocolate and it was served in a little Santa mug, like it's Santa's face, little mug. Of Santa's face. And then she said, you know what's crazy? This mug is from the dollar store. And on the back on the menu, they were selling it for $18.
If that ain't the most Toronto thing I've ever heard.
Right?
I was going to ask also your plate of olives and bowl of chips. How much were they?
Oh, surprisingly $5 each.
Oh, okay.
I know. I was like, wow, what a good deal.
That is surprising. Yeah. Good for them.
I really want to take you guys to this place because it's very cool.
I don't suppose it'll still be open in January, huh? Probably not.
No, it should. Oh, no.
Oh, no, wait. That was the first place. Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Let's put it on the itinerary.
Yeah. No.
The itinerary.
The drink place is a good place. Even the first restaurant was really cool. The waiter was a little bit much where he was like very gestury with his hands. And he's like, and how is everything? And then I would be like, great. And then he would move on to the other person. And then he would gesture the exact same way and be like, how is everything? They'd be like, great. And how is everything to our third person?
You know what? I think it's a general rule that should be known that if one person speaks for the table, you know, if someone comes along, the server comes along, and they always hit you with the, how are the first few bites? You know, if one person says it's good, then you should move on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. If no other bitches are going to speak up, walk away.
Leave. Yeah.
So, yeah, he was very nice and attentive, but it was just like, okay, thank you. So, I highly recommend.
Too attentive.
Yeah, I highly recommend. So, we went on a Sunday night, and then someone was complaining. They were like, whoa, an hour wait? The guy at the door was like, last night it was a 7-hour wait.
Ew. Yeah. Nothing is a 7-hour wait. I'm sorry. Aside from a flight.
Yeah. No. Nothing is a 7-hour wait. So, like,
maybe, like, a Super Bowl Rihanna moment would be a 7-hour wait.
Yeah, I would, like, I would wait.
Like, a fucking absolutely not a pop-up bar in Toronto, Ontario.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on.
So, like, people were like, oh, okay, I guess. Also, then, if it's longer than you want to wait, why is complaining the thing that you think is going to get you in?
Girl, if I knew the answer to that.
Yeah. So, that was very fun. I loved it. I would love to work there. And that goes perfectly into our movie of today, Molly. Oh, I didn't even ask you about, like, your life and stuff, though, but...
Yeah, I didn't go to any cool bars lately. Damn.
Sorry.
Yeah, holy shit. I went in a hot tub the other night in the snow. That was cool. Whoa. That was kind of Christmassy.
That's very, like... Oh, yeah, we're vacationing in Aspen.
Yeah, it was kind of like this spa, because, like, there were LED lights and everything, except instead of, like... Zen music, it was Kendrick. It was very
nice
evening. Very nice evening.
Nice.
Yeah, so not as eventful as yours.
No. That's very nice and relaxation. I went all over Toronto. I went to 3 bars in one night on a Sunday, and I was like, whoa, what are we doing here, guys?
You got home and you just slammed the door behind you and, like, put your arms up against it like Macaulay Culkin or something, and you were like, I'm never going outside.
Lost in New York.
Too much activity. Lost in New York.
But oh, what I was saying was that this, my Christmas adventure, works out perfectly for the movie that we're talking about this week. And what is that movie, Molly?
It's called Last Christmas. Starring Daenerys Targaryen and Henry Golding. Emma Thompson. It's Amelia, what's her name? Amelia Clark.
Yeah.
Is Daenerys Targaryen. Dude, I hated this movie. Really a lot.
Yeah. I understand.
And you know what? I'm gonna say unequivocally, this is my least favorite movie we've ever reviewed.
Whoa.
And we've seen some I know we've seen some stinkers, but the thing is, with this one, it's kind of a disappointment because Emma Thompson actually wrote it, dude. And everything else she's ever written, I've been like, ugh, lap it up, put it in a little teacup for me so I can drink it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And this is just like, this sucked, dude, so much. I hated this movie.
So, okay, this is the first time you've ever seen it?
Yeah.
Okay. Why do you hate it?
Okay, how do I summarize this? I felt like there was no plot. There was not really a strong plot for the first maybe 3/4 of the movie. And I know in a lot of rom-coms, the romance is the plot, but I didn't feel like it was, like, going anywhere or doing anything. It's like, you see Emilia Clarke's character, they kind of establish her life, and then her love interest shows up. And at first I was like, oh, Henry Golding, smash, obviously.
Yeah.
But then he starts talking. Dude, he sucks. Everyone in this movie is exhausting. They all, like, oh, God. They all sound so exhausting to be around.
Yeah.
Like, every single line is, like, some kind of sarcastic, witty quip. Like, no one can just say hello. They have to say some kind of 3-tiered, roundabout, backhanded greeting. And it's just, like, everyone thinks they're the manic pixie dream girl of the story. The only saving grace of this movie, in my opinion, is Michelle Yeoh and her outfits. She was flawless in every scene. She's gorgeous, great acting. She did the most with the script. Like, everyone else, I was like, oh, God. Like, it was just, like, it was very corny. Like, but for a movie that was clearly trying to be original, it was very corny. And also, I knew what the ending was going to be. Like, I didn't read anything about it. I didn't know what was going to happen, but... I guessed the ending about, like, halfway through.
Oh, yeah?
There's, like, this scene. Yeah, and, like, so I was watching it with my boyfriend, and I guessed it. I just blurted it out, like, halfway through, which I don't think he minded because he also wasn't enjoying it. So it wasn't like I was I was spoiling it for him or anything. But by the way, guys, if you haven't seen the movie and you don't want spoilers, you should go stop this podcast, go watch the movie, because there's going to be spoilers. Because the big plot twist is that... Wait, should we talk about the log line first before I give away the ending?
Let's do that first.
While you're doing that, I'll just summarize my main issues are kind of trite dialogue, trying too hard interactions and characters, and I didn't care about any of it. I didn't have sympathy or empathy for any of the characters. Mm-hmm. And you could argue that because she's not meant to be super likable at the beginning, maybe that's why you don't like her. But it's not that I just don't like Emilia Clarke's character. I don't like any characters. None of them were humanized to me at all. I didn't feel like they did the work. There was 4 montages in this movie.
Mm.
4. And, I mean, if you're a longtime listener of the show, you'll know that, well, personally, I hate montages because I think they're lazy. Sometimes montages are good. Fashion montages are great. Yeah. I know that you, on occasion, will like a good montage.
I don't hate them, but I, mm-hmm. when they show up, it's not like I have a visceral reaction where I'm like, ah, you put a montage in this movie? I just go, okay, you put a montage in this movie, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, it's the montage moment. Fine. Yeah. Fine. Have a montage.
And what they did with it in this movie was they kept showing montages to say, oh, these characters are bonding and getting closer, without actually showing us what the dialogue is. They're literally just like laughing congenially in every montage. It's like, well, what are you talking about? Like, what do you care about?
Yeah.
What is any context or background to your character? Like,
yeah.
Like, it was just so, like, lazy. And then the one that really put me over the edge is that at the end, they did the thing that I hate the most, which is where they make a montage of clips that you've just seen.
Oh, yeah.
Clips that you've just seen 10 minutes ago, 15 minutes ago. Hey, man, assume that if we got to this point in the movie, we know what all scenes just happened in the movie. Mm-hmm. And then they just play it back. It's like, what are you trying to reach a certain amount of screen time? Anyways, oh man, that really bugged me. I'm getting fired up here. Let me cool down my jets.
I have the log line for you, which, mm-hmm. to be honest, is a log paragraph. So, Kate is a young woman subscribed to bad decisions. Working as an elf in a year-round Christmas store is not good for the wannabe singer. However, she meets Tom there. Her life takes a new turn. For Kate, it seems too good to be true. That was like a Judy Bloom article.
Yeah.
That was so weird. Who wrote that?
Was that it?
Yeah.
Was that the end? Well, that doesn't give you a hook at all.
It was crazy.
It's like, well, it seems to be good. I feel like there was going to be more... Well, what?
Yeah.
What's the hook, you know?
Yeah, listen, I understand everything that you have said, and I agree with you on everything that you have said. Am I an absolute sucker and a stupid idiot fool for willingly watching this movie multiple times? Once in theaters where I watched it with my cousin, and she... We watched it in the theaters, and I normally can guess where a lot of things are going. For some reason, I didn't guess what was going to happen to the end, which I think we've given enough.
Probably your childlike sense of wonder.
Yeah, I think so. Just because, like, I don't know. Like, I knew. I could tell, like, it was not doing the things I wanted it to do, but I just, I get tricked very easily by twinkly lights.
Of which there are a lot in this movie.
I get tricked very easily by twinkly lights, mm-hmm. and
Twinkie lights.
And what are those? What is the thing called? The shiny decorations?
Tinsel. Garland.
And tinsel whatever. And garland and all of that stuff. Okay. I get distracted by those things. And then I also like Emilia Clarke pretty much in everything, even though I was just like, this is not, I don't know. Like, I just like all the people in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just wearing horse blinders and being like, I'm not acknowledging the flaws. I am turning my critical brain off. Like the first time I watched this, I'm turning my critical close analysis brain off. And I'm just having a great time. To the point where, like, in the theater, I'm sitting with my cousin. I don't know how she's reacting. She's not really saying anything. And then at some parts, I'm tearing up and I'm, like, crying to myself. And I'm trying very hard to cry very quietly. And then it ends. And we get the thing and I'm like, and then the movie ends. And the credits start rolling. And she immediately goes, I fucking hated that. And I went,
Kat, you're not a fool for liking this movie. Your cousin and I are just haters. That's all there is to it.
Okay, two things can be true, though.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, this movie was aesthetically gorgeous.
Yeah.
There were so many twinkly lights. It was like, this is what you want aesthetically from a movie about Christmas. A lot of the action is set in this year-round Christmas shop owned by Michelle Yeoh's character, who goes by the moniker of Santa, which is, like, I guess, like, kind of, like, boss or whatever. Like, in my mind, I was thinking, like, oh, it's, she just calls her Santa, like, boss. Because Amelia's supposed to be the elf. So Michelle Yeoh is the Santa.
Yeah.
But, like, everything inside the store, I was like, oh, my God, I wish the store was real. I want to go there so bad.
Yeah.
Like, literally, I went out and I bought this today because I was inspired. Can you see what it is?
Oh my God.
It is a novelty Christmas ornament in the shape of a short stack of pancakes. Amazing. With strawberries and whipped cream on top.
Cute.
Because this freaking store in the movie has all of these wacky, bizarre edgelord Christmas decorations. Like, I wanted every Christmas decoration in the store.
Yeah.
The little crocodile with pom-poms.
Yeah.
The gibbon. The metallic Christmas gibbon.
The metallic Christmas singing gibbon.
Everything was so weird. I loved it.
Yeah.
There was a little ornament of a UFO. And it was 3D. And there was, like, a little plexiglass dome. And then a little alien inside it. I was like, hell yeah. Yeah. I want that.
That's all. Yeah. It was very cute. And I was like, see, the thing is that there are some all-year-round Christmas stores, like, in Ontario, but they're always kind of, like, not kitschy enough, you know? This store was, like...
Yeah, they're a little too... Yeah.
Those stores are a little too, like, small-town Ontario kind of mom vibes.
Mm.
Kind of grandma.
It's, like, a lot of buffalo plaid and that, like, hand script font.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
The hand script font.
Little Ray Dunn vibes.
Oh.
Yeah.
My nightmare.
Ray Dunn for.
Yeah. So, like, none of the stores I've ever walked into that's been, like, an all Christmas theme have been kitschy enough. So, that's why I really like this. So, yeah. Like, a lot of the settings take place. Even the homeless shelters deck the fuck out in Christmas lights. Which is.
Yeah.
Which is not feasible.
That is the part where I suspended my disbelief because it looked so gorgeous.
Yeah.
It was like there's this homeless shelter in this beautiful, like, London cathedral looking building.
Yeah.
Some kind of government building or a cathedral. It had these enormous columns just absolutely wrapped to the gills with all these twink lights. Mm-hmm. And I was
twink
like
lights.
Loving it. The no, that's what I'm calling
oh
them.
Oh my God.
It was so beautiful. When they went to the skating rink and there was that, I guess like a chandelier, an XXL chandelier made of string lights.
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh my God, that's everything I want. All I want is 1,000 tiny lights.
Yeah.
Happy holidays.
So yeah, like you mentioned, Emma Thompson and her husband provided the story for this movie, and then they also, like, co-wrote it with somebody else. I think Boris Isakovic, who is... Oh, the dad. The guy who plays the dad.
Oh.
Yeah. Basically, this movie came about because it's, like, an homage to George Michael.
Mm.
Emma Thompson loves George Michael, and she was like, his music is beautiful, so I'm gonna make a story based off of it. And essentially, it's called Last Christmas because of his song, Wham Song, Last Christmas, where last mm-hmm. Christmas I gave you my heart, the very next day you gave it away. And that mm-hmm. takes this, that song literally.
Yeah, that's like, I remember, okay, so like I didn't actually make the connection. So the song goes, last Christmas I gave you my heart, right? That's the lyric, very famous Christmas song by George Michael. And I put two and two together that I feel like, should we give people a little bit more background before? I keep on trying to jump to the spoiler.
Sure.
But basically, the whole love story is, quote-unquote love story, I don't know if we want to call it that, but Amelia Clark, whose character's name is Kate, works in the... as an elf in the Christmas shop, and she is unlucky in everything, including health and love. So she had a heart surgery like the year prior. A heart transplant. Yeah, fully. And so she meets this guy, Henry Golding's character's name's Tom. And Tom is like very whimsical and like manic pixie dream girl and awful. The two of them are just awful together, but they both love it. And I'm like, whatever, it's kind of realistic. And then so he is like kind of weird and in and out of her life. He says he doesn't have a phone. She can't get in touch with him. So she's kind of like trying to be in a relationship with him. And he is like kind of floating in and out of her life. And then there's a few things that happen that are weird, and like, I was like, oh, this is one of those movies where there's like an angel teaching her a lesson. And then there's that scene in the park. She goes to this park that he always goes to and finds him there. And he says, you can't rely on me. And then she just goes off on him saying like, I can never get in touch with you, blah, 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 like all this kind of stuff. And then I was like, oh, he's a ghost. Which is about maybe the halfway point. I went, oh, he's a ghost.
That's crazy.
But yeah, I was like, oh, yeah, this is a ghost story. This is a ghost of Christmas heart transplants past. It was just like, it was just so, and then like 2 minutes later, I was like, oh, last Christmas I gave you my heart.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, I see.
The other shoe dropped. And I was like, oh my God, this, I was so mad. I was so mad when I put that together.
That's how.
Also, is it, like, I don't know if you know this or not, but scientifically, can a heart be transplanted between genders, no problem? Because he was like a 6'2" strapping young man, and she is like a 4'7" little pixie woman. And like, I know that if your heart gets too big in your own body, you can have issues. So wouldn't there be an issue putting, or like, is that not a problem? Like, can you just transplant any heart in any body as long as they're the same blood type, I guess? I just have so many questions. But anyways, the spoiler is he got hit by a car while he was biking around, and he was an organ donor when she needed a heart. So she got his heart. So the whole time she was seeing him, he was a figment of her imagination or some kind of like emotional specter. I don't know. He gave her information that there's no way she would have been able to guess without him being there. So I feel like there was a supernatural element to this. Like, she would have never been able to find his apartment if he didn't lead her there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I just looked it up, and it said, the worst were in men who received hearts from women. When the donor was bigger than the recipient, the sex difference did not affect survival. But when the donor was smaller, mm-hmm. people did not fare as well. So.
Interesting.
If, I guess, he gave his heart to her, then it's not as bad as if she gave it to him, because then that's a little heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you did it that way, it would be like putting a little outboard motor on a cruise ship.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, so like that also, like, anger, I think, was my cousin's reaction when she found out that it was the ghost. And I, to be honest, also was a little bit let down, where I was like, aw, because then I was just like invested in these two hot people.
Can I tell you why part of the giveaway was for me that he wasn't there?
Why?
or he wasn't going to be the actual love interest. So there's two interactions she has with the guy who works at the shelter. Mm. And they were a little bit, he was a little bit like, they don't do anything by accident in these type of movies, mm-hmm. right? There's just not enough screen time to have extra fiddle faddle. So they have like this one guy who's working at the homeless shelter, and he's just very understanding and kind and nice to her, encourages her. And I was like, oh, they wouldn't have him be doing this unless he was the actual love interest. Mm, mm. So then I go, okay, they're introducing another love interest subtly, not really. So clearly this other guy is not going to end up with her in the end. And also they would have pushed it way further faster with the emotional stuff. Like if he was going to end up with her,
yeah.
Like for example, like there were so many just weird interactions too. Like it was very creepy when he took her to his apartment and then she just sat on the floor and then she rested her head in his lap. And he was, like, caressing her, and, like, it was so bizarre. Like, it wasn't giving romance. It was giving, like, nurturing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Because also, like, when I think about it, even though I am still invested in this and I still, like, will watch it.
Mm-hmm.
You're right in saying that, like, they barely had interaction. At that point, they'd only had, like, mm-hmm. a handful of times that we've seen. And then she's acting like, oh, I haven't seen you. And then, where have yeah. you been? Like, I missed you and stuff. And it's like, how many times have you hung out with him?
Yeah.
Is it more times exactly. than we've seen? Or is it just, like, for hours longer? But it just doesn't seem like that. And time seems to be so, like, weird. In this movie, like, Christmas yeah. always seems like it's the next day, but then it was, like, yeah. 2 weeks later, and then it was Christmas Eve, and I was like, that was the beginning of December?
Yeah. That's the thing. I think that having that many montages is what stole away the intimacy that they were trying to build between Tom and Kate.
Yeah.
Because if you had seen them even have a couple, like, you didn't really even see them have very many conversations. You just saw montages of them walking and laughing together.
Yeah.
You're just supposed to assume, oh, they're getting closer. But then again, like, we didn't know how fast time was passing, right?
Yeah.
But then they found it necessary to put a chyron to show that the last scene at the homeless shelter Christmas concert happened 2 weeks later. Like, why did you feel the need to start indicating the time now?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because it was very confusing for the timeline.
Yeah. I don't think we mentioned, but this movie is directed by Paul Feig, who I am a ride or die for. And
mm-hmm.
like Emma Thompson, like, we know, we have watched and consumed all of their work before
yeah.
and been really big fans. And I still maintain that I am. It's just like, mm-hmm. not everything is going to be a winner, you know? You make it for some people.
Yeah, sometimes you get a stinker.
Sometimes you have a stinker, even though you have a bunch of, like, hot people and, like, good actors in it.
Yeah, stacked cast, amazing cast and crew. Like,
yeah.
I thought I was going to love this movie,
yeah.
honestly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, like, I get, again, like I said, I get every reason that you have said. I don't know. There's something, like, I think I just so willingly throw away my suspension of disbelief where I'm just like, what a great time.
I love Christmas.
I love love. I love George Michael. I love Twinkly Lights. I love Twink Lights.
You just turn into Linda Belcher.
Girl.
Christmas.
This is the most lizard brain I can get myself to be. So I have
That's
a
so
great,
funny.
Great time. I will
I wouldn't
say,
look at this gift horse in the mouth. If I were you and I had as much fun as you did watching this movie, I don't think, maybe we should just stop the podcast now and not analyze it anymore. No, as a matter of fact, why don't you talk about the things that you like about this movie?
Okay.
Like, tell me more about what you like.
I think I, like, briefly touched on it. So it was funny because I've watched this movie before. I rewatched it today right before we recorded. And I would have been fine not watching it because I had recently rewatched it, just because the second, like, It's the second after Halloween. It's like only trash Christmas movies are playing.
It's Christmas time.
It's Christmas time.
Have you? Can I do a little slight divergence?
Sure.
Have you seen the new Lindsay Lohan Christmas movie?
No. My friends are coming over this Thursday to sleep over.
Amazing.
We have rented the screening room in my building, and that is what we are going to watch.
I wish I could be there.
I know.
I so wish I could be there. I know. Okay, so tell me how it is. I'm saving it also.
I've been saving it. So I'm very excited. I will definitely report back, and I wish that we did do it, but maybe next year we'll do it.
Okay, it's all good.
Yeah.
So you were saying that the minute Halloween is over.
Oh yeah. Christmas. So the minute Halloween is over, I'm watching trash Christmas movies. And like there are lots of good Christmas movies out there, but that requires me to be like actually sitting there and enjoying it. With like Hallmark Christmas movies and the trash Netflix ones, I could just turn it on occasionally, like just hear what's happening in the background, look at the screen and be like, "Ugh, stupid," but then be enjoying it, you know?
Yeah.
So I have been watching Christmas movies, and then this one I actually watched with my my boyfriend, and I was like, come watch, you'll have a good time, knowing he was probably gonna hate it. And I think the whole time he was like, okay. And then I kept telling him, I was like you'll see, like you'll watch it, like keep watching it, you'll see. But when I watched this with my cousin, she absolutely hated it, but you'll see why. He's like, okay. And then we're watching it, and then the big reveal happens where he's a ghost, and he was like, what? He was a ghost? So that's his like big major reaction. The other thing that he asked me was, do I think that Emilia Clarke is a good actress?
Ooh.
And I was like, I don't think that she is a good actress in the same way that Florence Pugh is a good actress.
Mm-hmm.
Because anytime, and I don't know if it's just because Emilia Clarke was in Game of Thrones for 10 years, so like I know what she
was. It really 10 years?
Pretty much.
Oh my good god.
Because it was like 2012.
Oh my god, I'm gagged. Are you serious?
Let me look.
Holy shit, dude, that's crazy. That's like Supernatural level of tenure.
2011 to 2019 essentially, but like they started,
oh my god,
they started in like 2010.
Dude, that's crazy. I'm sorry to derail from your
no that's
you
okay.
You were talking about her acting skills.
Yeah So and I really consider that because it's like she hasn't done too many movies that are like big Oscar contenders or that she's been like praised on. She did this movie, she did I think a bunch of other little things, and then Me Before You. So it's like, I just think she's cute.
Yeah.
I think she's cute, and I think I like to watch her. I think she's interesting. Mm-hmm. Her face, she has a lot of movement in her face.
Very expressive eyebrows. Her eyebrows turn into the Eiffel Tower in the middle of her forehead.
Yeah. She gets all excited. She's very expressive, so I enjoy watching her. I don't think she's a bad time. She's cute to look at, and I think she's endearing and charming. So I have no problem. Mm-hmm. Henry Golding, I also find charming. However, like, he's like the charming, he's like the vanilla kind of charming. He's a cool dude.
Oh, yes.
I love him, but he's kind of like, okay, you know?
He's a Nilla.
Yeah.
Nilla wafer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but like, I don't hate him. Emma Thompson, she makes like however much silly everything is, she makes a meal out of her character here, which I find fun, and I just love her. I will always love anything she does, even if it's terrible. I will love it. I will watch it. I will be critical.
She humanizes.
Yeah, I will be critical of it, but she's so good that like when she's sad, she's sad, and like even when she has a crazy accent on, it's like, or like a very thick accent, I'm like, oh, she's so good. I love her.
Yeah, and, like, because she was doing this comedic accent. It was very over the top, but you know me. I'm so partial to the Eastern European accents. Yeah. Like, obviously, I'm going to love this. And then she still managed to have those quiet, sad moments. Because she does quiet and sad so freaking good, dude.
Does.
Like, her in, is it Sense and Sensibility? The one with Alan Rickman?
Like the Jane Austen one that she won an Oscar for? Yeah. Yeah.
So that was one of the first movies that I had seen her in that I knew who she was, like back when I was like 12 years old or whatever. And I was like, oh my God, I feel her sadness through the screen. It's not even like she's staring down the barrel of the camera. She's just so like good, man. She's just, some people just got it like that. I can't even explain it. It's a je ne sais quoi.
Yeah.
It's a certain, I don't know what.
Yeah. So I like her. I like Michelle Yeoh, even though her character is a little silly and a little mean.
I actually like that she's kind of a bitch.
No, I love that she's like her. A bitch, but it was just like, and Michelle Yeoh is so good at being like giggly in 1 second and then just be like, I am a girl, you idiot.
Yeah, I liked her a lot.
Yeah,
she was maybe fun. My favorite.
She's very fun. It's just like the scenes that she's in, sometimes it just feels not fitting of a woman of like Michelle Yeoh's caliber, you know. Anytime she was in the scene with like a boy, like sauerkraut boy, and they were acting and in love and so enamored by each other, I'm like, Paul, what is the direction here? What did you tell them?
Those scenes were very weird. Like,
yeah,
I feel like what they were trying to do was like two people who are like awkward yet lovable having love at first sight, but it wasn't lovable at all.
No.
It was forced.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think that it was just, I don't know. It was weird. It was like, we know that Michelle Yeoh is an amazing actress.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't her inability to act. It was something else. Something else going on there.
So I was like, again, there's a lot of things conspiring against those love scenes, those romantic scenes. So yeah, it's mostly the people that I like. I like George Michael's music in it. And with like any Paul Feig movies, there's always like a like very specific cast of characters who are like kind of big names who just take small roles, like make little cameos all over the place. So like one of the previous hosts from Great British Bake Off, Sue, I can't remember her last name, but Sue was in
it. Sue Perkins,
yeah. Sue Perkins is in it.
Yes, I love her.
I don't know the ladies who played the police officers, but they're very funny. Patti LuPone was in it just randomly.
Yes, yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah.
And then who else?
Rob Delaney, Peter Serafinowicz. Like, so many people just, like, I feel like who Paul or Emma Thompson called up on a weekday and was like, what are you doing tomorrow? Come play this character, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, like it was nice to see Fabian Frankel was in it.
I'm going to the IMDb page.
Fabian Frankel, who plays Sir Criston. What do you mean he was in
it?
His character's name is Fabian, but when?
Stop.
What the fuck? Are you telling me I saw this guy before House of the Dragon? Maybe they cut him out of the movie. Because I don't remember a Fabian.
Well, his character's name is clickable. Oh, Fabian. I don't know. You know what? I did notice someone in the background who I was like, oh, that kind of looks like Sir Criston. In one of the pub scenes.
Oh, yeah. A deleted scene. There we go.
No. Who knows? It could have been the scene that saved the movie.
It could have been. Hold on. I'm sending you the photo. I wish we saw this. They look so drunk. That's very funny.
I'm so keen. Let's see what this is. Oh, yes. Do you think this was supposed to be like one of her... Oh, my God. What is this Blackadder haircut?
Ah!
Why does he look like that? You know what he looks like? He looks like something straight out of Dead Poets Society with this little haircut and jacket. I don't know about this.
That'll do it for me.
Ugh. I pretend I do not see it.
That's very... That'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very easy.
That'll do, Fabian.
That'll do. He just needs roundish glasses and it's over for me. That's it.
Yeah. Oh, Captain, my Captain of the Guard.
Yeah, sorry. That was such a tangent. I just saw his name and I was like, when? Yeah. But yeah, lots of little cameos. You know who I really liked? The woman who played Dora, the homeless lady.
The homeless woman.
Yeah. When she was outside on the night of the Christmas concert that Kate is throwing out of, like, volunteering, she was like, you wankers, you get in here. You tossers, you get in here. You pieces of shit, you get in here. It was very funny. I liked her. I like
great tactic.
I like the cast of homeless people who were auditioning for the concert show.
Mm-hmm.
It's all fun. So like again, it's just like fun. I cannot stress how much I turned my brain off when I watched this. It's just a fun, good time.
There were some good, it's not like there was no good things for me. Like, yeah. I loved the aesthetics. I loved the fashion, like, what everyone, even the her elf uniform. So cute, mm-hmm. dude. So cute. I loved the shop. There was some, like, when they went on the date at the skating rink, that is a sick date idea.
Yeah.
Having a skating rink. I mean, spoiler alert, turns out she was there by herself because he was a figment of her imagination.
Which is also like
when I was watching it with my boyfriend, when she connected the dots that he actually wasn't there the whole time, he goes, "Oh, this is like Fight Club."
Oh my god, this is the rom-com Christmas girlies version of Fight Club.
Literally. Like,
that's when he so said fucking that, funny. I should text right? him and be like, "The thing you said about Last Christmas is so funny." And then he'll be like, "What?"
And I was literally like, "Can I steal that joke?" And he was like, "Yeah."
That's the best way to put it. And like, the big lesson is not that, like, what's the lesson in Fight Club? Is that capitalism is bad and we're all men cannot be anything without women.
Yeah, and like healthy expression of emotion is hard for men also.
Mm-hmm.
I think
for
and something about the corporate slog.
Yeah.
Something.
For Last Christmas, it's like don't let a man is not the one who needs to save you all the time. It was in you all along, even though you have a man's heart.
Yeah, I think we came kind of circled back there. You don't need a man to save you, except for in this one particular instance where quite literally a man saved you, but now it's up to you, you know. I feel like the whole like lesson that I took away from it was like kind of YOLO. It was obviously more eloquent than that, but it was basically like she started the movie being very reckless. She was missing doctor's appointments. She was drinking heavily. She was smoking. She was not eating good food. So this is a woman who's had a heart transplant less like a year ago.
Yeah.
And she is completely throwing her health to shit and not even trying. So it's kind of like trying to be like life is precious, mm-hmm. I think, mm-hmm. was kind of the message that I got. Because not only that, but then the fact that she was giving back to the community and like how the like people at the homeless shelter were enriching her life and vice versa. So that's the vibe I got. Like, Merry Christmas, life is precious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She literally says it in her speech, which I didn't love. She was like, the thing, she's like, we're lucky to be alive. And like, yes, okay, listen. It's very funny.
Look, listen.
It's very funny how adamant I am about turning off my brain when I still, while watching this, the thoughts are coming up where I'm like, I didn't like that. Yeah. That was poorly written. And I'm just going, shut up. Shut the fuck up.
Pushing them back down.
Shut up. Just enjoy something. Stop rewriting it in your brain. So her speech right
it's before. It's your fatal flaw.
Yeah.
That's your toxic trait, is that you're rewriting movies as you're watching them.
So exhausting. That's why I take micro naps. Because I'm always ABW, always be writing. Your brain
is like whirring like a hot computer monitor, like a hot computer fan, and you just need to take a little every once in a while to let it cool down.
Yeah. So in her speech, right before she starts singing, she says,
mm-hmm.
We're lucky to be alive. The second I hear her say, we're lucky to be alive, I start going. My tears are overactive. My tear ducts, busy.
Mm-hmm. Tears, consider them gerbils. Niagara Falls.
I'm sorry. I hope that the next time, like, Ian goes, how are you? I'll be like, consider me jerked. Like, if I had a...
love how in this scenario, next time Ian asks how you are, you will have been crying before he asks you this.
Oh, I actually meant please like jerking off.
Oh.
Oh, man. Okay.
The moral of the movie is you don't need a man to...
You don't need a man to jerk you off.
Hey.
Hey. Jerk your own self off, ladies.
Yeah.
Lean in? More like jerk off. I can't even remember the fucking point I wanted to make. Okay. It's about the speech that she makes right before she sings the song Last Christmas.
Yes.
It was essentially like, we are lucky to be alive. And essentially, what makes us happy is helping each other, period. And everyone goes, wow. And I'm like, that's it?
Good one, guys.
Great one, Amelia. You should.
What is this after school level bullshit?
Yeah.
Just kidding.
What is this?
But kind of.
I was going to say, what is this, VeggieTales? But VeggieTales was sick.
VeggieTales was quite dynamic, actually.
Yeah. So there are moments where it's like, man, that was too obvious. That was very on the nose.
I wonder if that was like, which is why I see stuff like that. And I was like, how did Emma Thompson let this happen?
Mm.
But then I think that maybe it's the like corporate Hollywood machine that made it. Maybe she had a good idea. And then we're like, we're going to take this, but we're going to do our own thing with it because they think people are stupid.
This is the thing I was going to say, too, is that I would love to see the original script. Like the script that she handed in to be like, this is the one that we're going to do. And then just see either how much like Paul changed it or how much they had to change it to be like a marketable Christmas movie, you know?
Yeah.
This is like Ghost and Fight Club and Love Actually, you know?
Oh, yes.
All combined.
Yes.
Into one. And it's just kind of like all the worst aspects of all of those movies. Set to good music and bokeh effect.
Oh my god, so much of that.
So much bokeh, oh.
It's giving Tumblr aesthetic. You know what else was giving Tumblr aesthetic, kind of? Was the fact that they had her in the, like, hot mess girl TM uniform, which is a leopard coat and smudged black eyeliner.
Yeah,
it's like, okay, Sienna Miller.
And, like, constant heeled boots. Heeled booties.
Dude, that is also, man, not believable, dude. She was wearing those boots the whole time. She never took them off. She went into people's houses and didn't take your goddamn shoes off when you're in people's houses. Come on.
Boots off.
What are you doing? It's raining and snowing outside, you animal.
Yeah.
God.
That's also another thing is, like, one thing I found funny on the rewatch today is, like, how I did have questions. I've had these questions before about how she would have found out things like where his fucking apartment was or how to get into the skate rink by herself.
Yep.
And how to find that alleyway with the little mice crawling on the wall and stuff. Like, is she just walking around by herself or is she really seeing this guy? I think she was. And I like the I like the ambiguity of it where Emma Thompson is like, that's not the point. Don't figure it out. Just take the lessons and go on with it, you know?
Yeah.
Which is funny. But it's also, it creates more questions and some people can't get over that when they watch it. So it's just like, give them something so that they have peace of mind, you know? Don't be too vague.
I think that they meant him to really be there and not just be a figment of her imagination. Like, what am I trying to say? They meant him, he's a real ghost, as it were, not like not a Tyler Durden. Because purely because if the second thing were the case, then that would mean she has some kind of, I don't know, maybe she's got some kind of brain tumor or dissociative identity disorder, because that is a major problem. Mm. That is going to be a major problem. And also, he just went away.
Yeah.
He just went away. You should be worried. You should be worried in looking into that. So that's why I think that that's not the case, because that is just dark and sad and not really, doesn't really jive with the spirit of Christmas, you know?
I also realized that she never told anyone about him. She only ever really mentions him to, like, the guys who work at the home.
Santa.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Santa. But then she never, like, okay, yeah, so she did mention him to people, but then they never went, why have I never seen this guy? Are you okay? Are you making him up, you know? Like, it was never that. It was always just like, oh, he's not around, you know?
Yeah.
Which I like them not also piling on her, be like, well, first you were ill and now you're going crazy. Like, what's going on? Like, I'm glad that that was left out, because then it just would be a big fucking mess, you know?
Yeah, too much.
Too much. Because there's a lot already, like, it feels like a lot going on.
There's so much going on, and I think they'd probably needed to pare back a little bit in order to make it more palatable to... God, I always just want fewer characters, if need be. You know what I mean? It's like, not every movie needs to be an ensemble, you know, one of these pastiche... What do you call the genre of movie, like Love Actually and Valentine's Day and stuff like that, where it's like a lot of different storylines, because it's so hard to do right. And this is... not necessarily that, but there's so many like character dynamics that they try and make them all seem important, but it's like, you know, she didn't really need to have a sister in this movie. If you took the sister out, it would have been the same effect. And or take some of her friends out, like she has so many friends who she's disappointed. Like, it doesn't need to be, you know what I mean? Like, you could have spent more screen time developing the important relationships.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Not that I didn't like the dynamic with the sister, but it was just like, she apologized to her sister and she made amends, but she never seemed to apologize to her mom. And I don't know if that's a deleted scene, but like, her mom just takes her in so quickly and doesn't, like, gives her a lot of shit all the time, but doesn't tell her that, like, what she's doing is also hurting her, because she has to just watch her throw her life away with a new heart. Like, she has this new chance at life, and then her mom then gets to watch her, like, throwing it away, you know? And, like, she never apologizes for that. She just kind of, like, comes home because she has nowhere else to go, because she's fucked up all of her other friendships by, like, doing something so shitty in all of the places that she stayed, and then goes home begrudgingly. And then the only kind of, like, semblance of an apology is when she comforts her mom when all of the news about, like, Brexit and stuff is happening.
At first, I really don't understand why they wedged that in there. I feel like the Brexit thing, like, I guess, like, I kind of get it, like, in as much as it relates to her mom, but it felt kind of shoehorned in, don't you think?
It did, because it didn't, like, super go anywhere, but it just, I don't know. It felt like, okay, this is the bigger context of the time and what's going on, so I guess there's a bigger story, but maybe then she gets to have a connection with her mom. Maybe, like, it was put in there so that she can have that connection with her mom, and then she can also have that interaction on the bus with that couple who were, like, discriminated against.
Yeah.
But, like, that's about it, and it didn't serve a
also
bigger
very
purpose.
Funny that they were like, oh my god, these poor, like, Polish people in the UK, they're getting discriminated. It's like a white on white crime.
I know. I realized that today, where I was he was like, and the rest of you should be speaking English. And I was like, you chose the white people to discriminate against in the UK?
I don't know. The whole thing, I was just like, I felt like that whole thing was, it felt like random political statement. Like, okay, yeah, bigotry is bad. Like, and I don't know.
Okay, and what else? What are you going to do about it? Nothing? You just...
Racism against Polish people and, like, what?
You just acknowledge that racism... You just figured out that racism is bad. Okay, buddy, thank you.
It just feels a bit rinky-dink, don't you? Because it didn't go anywhere. And it's like, I feel like if they wanted to have... If they wanted to set that all up as just, like, a bonding moment for Kate and her mom, there could have been something else. There could have been something else.
They literally had singing in common.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, why wasn't it that?
This is one of those movies where they set up, you see them setting up the groundwork, and you're like, oh my god, so much potential. And then they just, like, leave half of it at the starting line. Yeah. I'm like, what? Okay.
Yeah, no, exactly. All right. Like, yeah, on the rewatches, I'm like, oh yeah, I realized that didn't really go anywhere. Okay. Got it. What did you think about, forgetting, like, where this is going and all that stuff, the scenes that we did get with Tom, Henry Golding's character, and Kate, Amelia Clark's character, what did you think of them and their dynamic and, like, the two actors?
Hated it.
All of it? Every aspect of it?
It was forced. It was not cute, awkward. I'm strong-arming you out of the way, awkward. I didn't want to be there when they were interacting. I didn't find it endearing. I didn't see a dynamic between them. The whole time it felt like, I don't know. It just felt like the writers were trying way too hard to make them quirky. And yeah. I didn't care. And that was the main relationship in the movie. And I'm just like, oh, shit. Like, you know, like, something's going on here. There's just, it wasn't doing it for me. Like, I didn't feel like they complemented each other with their personalities or even with the dialogue. It felt like clunky. I did like the scene where he takes her to the skating rink. Hate to harp on about this skating rink again, but I really like that scene. Horrified by the scene where he took her to his apartment, which was supposed to be touching and this, like, emotional outreach by Kate and all this kind of... It's supposed to be, like, this breakthrough moment, but to me, I was just like, ugh, why? Why are they just hovering so weirdly around each other? And they were just so, like, stiff and awkward. And then, like, she got into the bed with her shoes and jacket on. There was just so many weird things happening. I felt like it was a bit, like, I don't know, not thought out.
Yeah.
Or overthought. I don't know. It's so hard for me to put my finger on it. But it just felt so awkward. And I hated the dialogue. I hated the dialogue between the two of them. Like, it was... I don't understand the whole look up thing. There was no background to it. There was no context. Tom kept telling Kate to look up. It was like his slogan. And I thought, oh, they're going to make it. They're going to explain why he says it. But they never do. They never give it meaning. They show that it's on the park bench, but we don't know why he says it. Why is he saying that? What does it mean? Yeah. And it was played out too, because he repeated it probably 8 times in the movie.
Yeah, the first time I thought about it, I was like, did he say look up because he got hit by a bus?
Oh, fuck. Can you imagine if that was his epitaph on his little memorial bench? Can you imagine if you burned up in a fire or something? You died in a fire and they put on your like headstone, they would say like...
Stop, drop, and roll?
She lit up the room.
Lit up the room.
Something like, you know what I mean?
She
like
went out in a blaze like of glory.
Oh my god, that one's amazing. Perfect. But can you imagine like that your epitaph is like a little snide little comment about how you died?
Yeah.
Because that would also like imply, it was implied that he like said it all the time in his life.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But then
we don't know that.
I don't.
The only time that we see him alive is when he was about to die.
Yeah.
And literally. He was never saying, like, look up. His apartment never had anything that said look up. She didn't find a fucking diary or anything. She didn't.
Yeah, there's no context. He didn't,
like, yet. So the park bench having his name and then the words look up, we don't know if that was in commemoration to him. He doesn't seem like the kind of guy or character who would then pick a park bench and be like, I'm going to put my own name and my catchphrase on there. So like, clearly it was done to honor him. So then it's like, okay, so people know that he did, but there was just no other kind of semblance, like any, like what you're saying, there was no proof of it in his actual life. If she had somehow found his fucking diary and he was like, I look up every day.
You know what I was hoping was going to happen was that when she got his phone from his apartment, she was going to turn it on and she was going to learn about him. She was going to learn more about him from his phone. And then they just didn't do that. I was like, okay.
That's the thing too. Like you were saying, there's so many things that get started that are like major points and focuses and stuff and then just fall flat where it's like the phone was in the cupboard because literally the phone was in the cupboard. And then when she actually gets it, nothing, you know? And like that would have been a good thing is that she like opened his phone and then she got to see like video of him alive or whatever and then like maybe he wrote in the notes app and was always like, today I saw a bird because I looked up.
Yep.
You know?
She goes into the notes app and he goes, he's just workshopping different slogans, catchphrases for his life.
Look up.
He's like, look up. Look to the left doesn't have the same ring.
No.
You know, mind the gap. It's taken.
Yeah.
So look up. Oh, look up. It's kind of optimistic. I like it.
All look right, around.
I like bird watching. Yeah. So.
Yeah, exactly. Again, I don't know if it's just because I like the two actors that I just was not being critical of their thing. Sometimes it was very much like, oh, there was a line. Oh, it's when you can hear the age of the people who actually wrote the lines. So the stuff, the stuff about like when Henry Golding's character was begrudging of the dating apps.
Mm-hmm.
When he was like raging against those, I could hear the age of the writers who wrote those words.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. And then, again, when they're that terrible bedroom scene where he's comforting her, why do we have to know who we are? Why can't we just be, he's like, there's no such thing as normal. Like, why can't we just be human? And like, I get it, but also, please, please don't say that, you know?
Yeah.
We're just like, it's just clunky in certain ways. And I really want to know.
You know what?
What?
You just kind of put the last puzzle piece in for me about why I don't like their like interactions and dialogue. It's because neither of them is ever really giving anything away about themselves personally. Like, they're not bonding. They're just peacocking.
Ooh.
The whole time. That's both of their characters' interactions with each other. They're peacocking until she gives him that one trauma dump in the bedroom scene. But then he doesn't tell her anything about, we don't know anything about him aside from, like, as viewers who are, I guess, omniscient, right?
Because
we're the viewer, we see everything. So we don't know, we know his first and last name. We know that he liked to cycle around, that he maybe volunteered at the homeless shelter, that he liked to look up.
Yeah.
That's all we know.
Yeah.
We do not know what he did for a living, if he had family, where he was from, like, what were his interests. You know, we don't know anything about him. And we know a little bit more about Kate because we see her doing it. But even so, like, all of her interactions with him is like they're both trying to out cool girl each other.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So weird.
Yeah. See, that's the thing why it doesn't work, I think, as well in a love story, because like in Fight Club, it's not like we need to know that much background of Brad Pitt's character. And if we do find out, and I haven't watched Fight Club in a while, but if we do find out stuff, it's like we know that that's what Tyler's brain is creating eventually.
But yeah.
Like in this instance, he was a real guy. He's technically a ghost, because then how else would she know all of these things that he only knows, right? So he is a ghost, but then it's not in the same way that, like, the movie Ghost was, like, with Patrick Swayze. And even a rom-com that I love, Just Like Heaven, with Mark Ruffalo and Reese Witherspoon.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Another ghostly tale.
We definitely have to do that movie eventually.
I love that
but
movie.
But, like,
that was a great plot twist.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
Loved it.
But, like, in those things, they're actually bonding and revealing stuff to each other. And she's telling him about her, and he's telling...
Exactly.
She's finding out stuff about him. But in this, it falls flat because, like, in order to preserve the secret, the big plot twist, we know nothing about him.
I feel like there's so much more... But, like, his job, does he have family? Like, that kind of stuff, he could have disclosed,
yeah,
right?
It could without, have, like, in the
You know what I mean? It's so bizarre that they...
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, I don't know. I just...
Yeah, I agree with that, because it was very, like, one-sided, where it was just, like, that's why he... I think that's why their, like, dynamic falls flat, is because it wasn't, like...
There's no tender moments.
There's not enough tender moments. They're not, like, impactful. And then when he says the line at the end, when she, like, when she goes to the park and she meets him again, but she knows that he's, like, a ghost or whatever. And... Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, still, I fucking tear up because I am a Cancer rising. I'll blame that. But when he says, like, take care of my heart, And he says, it was going to be yours either way.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that, I like that line. I think it would have hit much harder, though, if we saw some kind of, like, thing in the past where they were almost always going to meet, you know? Like, they were, like, parallel to each other.
Then it would ring true.
Then it would ring so true, you know? Or if it was, like, missed.
But, in fact, all we see... You know what the dynamic relation, the relationship dynamic was between the two of them? It felt like a sober coach.
Yeah.
And their like little brother or little sister or whatever the phrasing is. Like, honestly, that's what
my
it felt
sober
like.
Sober older brother. you mean sponsor?
Yeah. Yes, that's what I meant.
No, that was really good, though.
That was the dynamic. Yeah, it was like, I didn't get romance. I didn't get that kind of vulnerability or passion or tenderness. Nothing.
That's what I mean, is, like, I would love to see the original concept and original story to see if it started off as, like, a romance or if it was, they were like, well, it's a Christmas movie. It should be a romance. You have Emilia Clarke and Henry Golding. What, are we going to waste these hot people?
It could have totally have been, like, it totally could have been a turn your life around second chance story.
Yeah.
And it would have been, I would have eaten that shit up like a tiramisu.
Yeah. You said that like a Southern lady.
Spent too much time in Bama.
Yeah.
Now I'm just.
Now you're just.
Nothing.
Full of South.
I was about to say something bigoted.
Probably. Let's cut you off there. But yeah, I think. I think if they had kept it kind of platonic and it was like more a sponsor, a little sister relationship, it would have been a lot more impactful because then you're asking for us to buy into it less. Because to buy into a romance, you need a lot.
And it also gives, tells you what Tom's motivation was.
Yeah.
We don't know what his motivation was. Why was he creeping around her, trying to get her attention, and then trying to turn her life around only to be like, I'm gonna go now, now that you've got your life back in order, versus adding the romance element makes it seem like he did it to make her fall in love with him, but then decided against it or something. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't, his motivations are unclear.
Yeah. And it's not like he has a little angel buddy that he's like, oh, I was just trying to get her to turn her life around because she has my literal heart and I don't want to see that go to waste. Like, I genuinely died for this white bitch to live. But now I'm like falling for her. She's a little cute, you know? So, like, we don't get any of that.
Yeah.
He just is telling her, don't depend on me. And then we don't know why.
And I get it. He's a ghost. So he's not going to be around. Maybe he's a little mysterious. But, like, there's so many other... Like, the movie, is it called Ghosts? The BBC movie? The TV show?
Yeah.
Like how funny, quirky, intimate little, like, little pastiche stories do we get with that one? The other movie, the one about, the one where Nicholas Holt is a zombie?
Warm Hearts. Warm Bodies.
Warm Bodies. That's it done well, okay?
Yeah.
We know his motivations. Yeah. We know so much about him as a human or undead person.
Yeah, I think honestly.
So it can be done.
It can be done. Honestly, if she had just realized, if he had just from the get-go been like, listen, my heart is in you, it would have been much better. If at the beginning he's like,
yes,
he's like, you have to listen to me. Take care of my heart. And she's like, I'm going crazy. I'm just going to leave. I'm too drunk. And then he's like following her through walls and stuff. That would have been a better movie.
That is the plot to Just Like Heaven.
Oh, that's exactly it. No, but she.
Which I love, by the way. Yeah. So 1,000 times I would rewatch it in a different iteration. Absolutely.
Yeah. But like, it's literally all of this and all of this ambiguity was because they wanted the big reveal at the end, and it's like,
yeah,
it wasn't worth it.
No,
your audience hates it too much. It wasn't worth it. There was no payoff there. I'm so sorry, Emma Thompson.
Everyone that I was watching it with groaned.
Yeah,
groaned. We all went, oh, man.
Yeah.
Like, that's stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone was upset. Nobody liked it. I could tell in the theater. That's why when I was tearing up.
Nobody liked that.
When I was tearing up, I was like, oh.
Yeah. Everyone, you were the only person having a good time there. You were on a roller coaster with a bunch of people who don't like roller coasters. Yeah.
I genuinely was like, when I first watched it and then it happened, I was bummed out. And mm-hmm. I was just like, we're going to just not talk about that and keep going.
Yeah. My headphones are about to die, so we might have to wrap up soon. Okay. Sorry to cut you off there.
So overall, I know how you feel about it. What specific rating would you give it?
I would give it 1 lesbian pudding out of 10.
1?
Yes. And the only reason I'm giving it 1 is because I really liked Michelle Yeoh's outfits.
Yeah. Wow. Damn.
Yeah.
Okay.
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah. Damn. I would give it like 6
mm-hmm.
metallic singing gibbons out of 10. That's my very generous Christmas.
You're like, that's as low as I can go.
That's okay. As low as I can go. It has a lot of the things that I like, so I'm just going with my heart, my generous Christmas heart. That's the rating, okay? I don't tend to be controversial, but this is where I am, okay?
This is the truest, like, snapshot of our sensibilities, because most of the time, I rate it pretty close to what you rate it, but this is where we differ, and that's okay, mm-hmm. because diversity is the spice of life.
There we go. I'm going to put that on your tombstone.
Yeah, put it on my... And also, guys, that's the moral of this episode. Just in case it wasn't obvious. First off, we're lucky to be alive. Which, actually, I do feel lucky to be alive. As trite as it is to put it in a movie that obvious. Lately, you know, I'm getting older. Time is passing. My knees are fucked. Like, we are lucky to be alive. We're lucky to have the things we have.
Yeah.
I do feel pretty blessed. I don't know.
That's why I tear up.
Getting a little corny, but yeah.
That's why I tear up when she says it. I'm like, you're right.
Oh my God, she's right. She's right, and she learned it from a ghost.
Where can they find you on the social media, Molly?
Right. You guys can find me on social media on Instagram and TikTok at Molly's Outbox. Kat, how about you?
Can find me on any social media at It's Catherine Ram, and you can find the podcast on Instagram and TikTok at VomCom Podcast. Please also tell your friends. Please mm-hmm. like and subscribe where mm-hmm. that is applicable, especially on iTunes or whatever. iTunes,
yeah.
Apple Podcasts, wherever you get on your Spotify podcasts. On
yeah
Spotify Anchor. Do that there.
Yep. Download it, like it, listen to it again multiple times. Subscribe, then unsubscribe, then subscribe again. Who knows?
Leave us maybe comments. That does something. Give us ratings. Any of the things, yeah. Please. All of the above. Does that sound...
Also, to anyone who commented on one of our most recent podcast TikToks, thank you very much. You're all very nice and engaging, and thank you very, very much.
Yeah, we're trying
because we had one TikTok that blew up.
We had one TikTok that blew up. That was very nice. Oh my God, what's it like to be a celebrity? We're gonna try to comment.
Yeah,
we're gonna try to reply to everybody else. So hang in there. We'll get to you. We were overwhelmed.
Yeah, if we haven't replied to you yet, it's because literally just like we're overworked and that's it.
That's it. Capitalism is beating us into the ground. Okay, bye.
Bye.
I am fond of you, you know.
And a girl.
I often wish you weren't such a stinker.